It's Thursday in New York City. How are you? It's Mark Farrell. The show's Insight on the Progressive Radio Network. For all my friends down in Florida, I hope this finds you guys hunkering down. And I hope the forecasters are entirely wrong. Because with a foot of water expected, gale, high, unprecedented winds. We don't want that, right? We want to just kind of give you maybe a day off. So you stock up on D batteries for the rest of your life, and hopefully you won't have to use them, right? Well, I think up in the tri-state area here, where we're broadcasting live in New York City, in the plush Gary Knoll studios of the Progressive Radio Network, I think we're going to be unscathed. But the show is full of very dangerous content today. We're going to be talking about beer pong. Yes, beer pong. Disability Pride Parade, and a team of people, the Willotes, Team Willotes, that have essentially circumnavigated the globe on two wheels. Incredible. They are being hailed as champions in more ways than one. Also going to speak to you about how I experience some crazy phenomenons twice in 1 week. I've been speaking to audiences, as you know, for years, and in 1 week, I experienced two things I had never experienced before. So very, very interesting, and it's always nice to share kind of things of that nature because, you know, for people who are out there who do public speaking or who just like to be entertained, because that's one of the reasons why you listen to the show, I will entertain you because that's what I do. So listen to this. If you have a son or daughter in college and you don't hear from them too often, which I'm sure is pretty common, I have some good news for you. Well, first of all, there's a caveat. They have to drink beer. Well, I'm not saying, I'm not promoting that they should drink beer, but if they do drink beer, it's more likely that you're going to hear from them. And the reason why is because my sister shared a great story with me the other day. She said, Mark, I got a call from my son the other night on Friday night at 9 o'clock at night. She immediately lunged for her cell phone and said, what's wrong? And he said, hi, Mom. And she said, what's wrong? And he said, nothing. She said, really? He said, yeah, nothing's wrong. She said, okay, well, why the 9 o'clock phone call on a Friday night? I mean, I love you and I welcome the call, but this is highly unusual, highly unorthodox for you. Well, she goes, where are you? Are you in trouble? No, I'm telling you, everything's okay. So what happened is he's playing beer pong in college, a senior, and he lost. So part of the loser's deal is that you have to, of course, drink and consume a large quantity of beer, and most importantly, call your mom in front of all your friends and tell her that you love her. Isn't that great? This is the best thing that's come out of the college community in years for me. I think this is awesome. Forget about the debt and all the tuition and the price of books and all that stuff. This is vital, highly, highly insightful and educational material here. You can't make this up. So that phone call goes relatively well. She can hear everybody laughing in the background, like, all right, let's get back to the game, et cetera, et cetera. But her phone rang again around 11 o'clock. She's like, you lost again? He goes, yeah. Isn't this great? The open lines of communication for family in the 21st century, as we know it. The digital medium bringing people together. Hobbs, breweries bringing people together on every level and every molecule. I love it. So he goes, yeah, I lost again, Mom. And I still love you. So now at this point, my sister, his mother, is at a bar herself. She can because she's single and she's living a high life in Chicago, working very hard and doing very, very well. But of course, now she didn't get too panicked after the second call. So I ask you, if you haven't received a phone call from your child, whatever year they're in, hopefully this is not going to be a high school phone call, college or post-college, it's not a bad thing. At least they're checking in, and at least you know they can articulate, they're sober, they're not unconscious, which is a good thing, you know? So I thought I had to share that with you because I thought it was pretty, pretty fantastic. So I really kind of stay away from the political talk here because there's a lot of shows who do that, and they do it very, very well on the Progressive Radio Network. And not only that, but you're probably really goddamn tired of hearing about this party, that party. And actually, you're hearing more about the third party now, the independent party. So, and that's great. And I'm going to leave that to everybody else. But once in a while, when things really get colored outside the lines, Mark Farrell has to do some reporting for you, right? Of course, this is why I'm here, my friends, because you need to know information like this. So The other day in Loveland, Colorado. Doesn't that sound great? Oh, I'd like to live in Loveland, Colorado. I mean, you know the air in Colorado is good as it is, but Loveland, bring it on. I can talk to my wife about a relocation plan. Anyway, so there's a mother, undeclared mother. She's not sure who she's voting for, and maybe after this incident, she may have given herself a very clear understanding of how the party stands. So she went to a Trump rally. And very, very happy to go attend and meet some people, you know, find out what his policies entail, et cetera, and good luck on that, and find out just, you know, some overall information. And so she went there with her 7-year-old daughter, who was born, unfortunately, with some pretty unforgivable birth defects. So these two beautiful people, Jennifer and her daughter, Jennifer Mao, M-A-U, Jennifer Mao, out of Loveland, Colorado, go to this rally. And so they're there for a few minutes, et cetera, and they're talking to some other people. It sounds like, from what I read, they're in a circle of people, some other persons with disabilities there as well. And so they're talking, et cetera, I guess some people who are a little bit more well-versed, knowing Trump, et cetera. And then Jennifer Mao, the mother of the child who's disabled, brought up the Serge Kovalensky issue that happened last November. Remember Serge? Serge is a New York Times reporter who has a disability, who has a muscle condition. I believe it's a muscle condition, a joint condition. And so his arms kind of are not that controllable. And so Serge had asked a question, and Trump then made fun of him physically and audibly as well. And it made international acclaim, I should say, widely speculated as just something very, very insensitive. So she brought this up. Jennifer brought this up. And automatically, all the Trump supporters started to shun her. She felt extremely uncomfortable to the point where she was actually escorted out by Secret Service. Now, you would think going to a rally, it sounds like a small rally as well, more like a town meeting or something of that, you know, information gathering, meet and greet, you know, find out what the party stands for. You would think you would be embracing people. And whether you believed in people with disabilities having the same opportunities or having the ability to think and act and perform like everyone else, even if you can't believe that, then maybe you should keep that thought to yourself. But here she is, this mother who's trying to obviously also do right by her daughter, because I have a son who's 7 and a daughter who's 4. But even when they were younger, when we go to vote, we take them with us. That's a little bit of an inconvenience, but they are going to know the power of voting. Take them into the booth, et cetera. It's a whole process. It's a nice tradition. And they understand the power of the voice. I was making up my own word, but the power of the voice and the vote. So I think it's great. So on a twofold level, it's great that Jennifer went there on her own, brought her daughter to show the fact that, you know, here's what I'm doing. I'm doing some exploring here on both parties, but here I am at the Trump rally. And that's what happened. And I feel so, so bad that, number one, that she had to experience something of that nature. And then for also just, you know, being brave enough to bring up the fact that the New York Times reporter Serge Kovalensky was ridiculed on a worldwide platform and then finally had to be escorted out by Secret Service only about 20, 30 minutes into this. So that's a real shame. It's a real shame. It's a real testament to the fact that people everywhere, doesn't matter who you vote for, can be insensitive and rude. And there's no need for it. I mean, what good is that going to do you? Oh, good. We got rid of Jennifer and her daughter. And what? So you won the vote, the campaign, the election? No, you just tarnished the name a little bit more. So, you know, I just urge people, certainly when you hear a story like that, to always think twice about what other people are thinking and or experiencing. You know, it's an old cliche, but you never know what battle somebody's fighting. And that's so true. And on that note, I always like to welcome your calls at 888-874-4888. And always emails at mark@markfarrellmotivation, mark@markfarrellmotivation. So there's a couple, Jack and Corrine Willoughby, and I think I just botched their name, a husband and wife team. They have done something almost inconceivable. And their motto is, you know, you can achieve anything at any age, under any circumstances. You only need to find your passion, set a goal, formulate a plan, and pursue it relentlessly. And they're from Howard Beach, great part of the five boroughs here. New York City, or New York State, I should say. And they are hailed as New York State champions of the 2016 National Bike Challenge. And we're going to meet them in just a few minutes because they have a great story. They pedaled an average of 80 or more miles a day for over 5 months. So it begs the question, like, what have I done or what have you done possibly? I'm not putting you on a hot seat, but, you know, it just makes you think, like, what have you done consecutively besides eat, breathe, and sleep for the last 5 months? Hopefully we've done some good for ourselves, physically and mentally, fed our brains, fueled our bodies, you know, maybe exposed ourselves to something new, helped somebody in need, et cetera, something of that nature. Kind of cool, right? So they have a great story. So hang out for a few minutes. We're going to meet them. And I wanted to tell you about something that happened besides the beer pong conversation, which being very parched myself, sounds like a really good call I wish I could make right now. But I'll tell you, I love you right now. If you can send me a virtual, a digital cold beer, it can be any domestic or imported. That's fine. All right. Good. I'll wait for it. You got my email, right? All right. Good. So I did two talks the other day. I actually did a walk on Sunday, hosted that. But I'm going to bring up this topic where... So the one talk I'm doing is at a high school. It's a packed auditorium, maybe 500-700 kids. I'm not sure how many, but it was packed. And it was a good talk. It was about over an hour long. And about, I don't know, 45 to 50 minute mark, all of a sudden I see the seas parting and some student coming towards me. And it was at a quiet moment. And you love quiet moments as a speaker because you know that everybody's listening because their eyes are following you and their ears are totally, totally open and are just watching and listening and waiting for everything you do and say. But all of a sudden, the seas start parting and this kid starts walking towards me. And, you know, being visually impaired, you know, I see him lumbering towards me, but, you know, I can't see that he's turning blue or yellow or whatever. So I just make a joke. I'm like, hey, buddy, do you have a hall pass? And he looks at me, he's like, I just puked. So I was like, is it something I said? I can rework what I said. And then he just runs off, of course. So what happens is the whole auditorium becomes out of control, tumultuous. So there's vomit everywhere. There's kids with vomit on them. It was spewing everywhere. It was not an ugly scene. I mean, it was not a pretty scene. It was a very ugly scene. It made me think of, what was that movie? Not Poltergeist. Oh, Linda Blair, you know. Protruding, vomiting. Yes, but you got it. It'll come to me. So that's what was happening. I'm like, oh my God, I've totally lost control of this audience. And it's never happened before. So it was a very, very interesting learning experience because I'm like, all right, I can go about this one of a couple ways. I can either make fun of this or I can try to just do like the principal sound. Okay, boys and girls, let's settle down. But I don't want to be that person because I wasn't that person up to that 45, 50 minutes. So basically, I just take a step back. I'm like, hey, you guys have seen people throw up before, and you've thrown up on your shoes, I'm sure, before. So it's nothing, no big deal. Just relax, hang out. We'll get it cleaned up. So I thought that was a safe bet to go. And of course, the principal did step in and did the old, okay, you know, so I'm glad I made that decision. So it was very interesting as a speaker to experience something of that nature for the first time, you know, in a fairly big size setting. And the other one was even more interesting, I think, because I had about maybe a little bit smaller, maybe 450 to 600 people, all professionals. I was speaking at a mental health convention. I speak about a lot of different topics, as you know, mental health, overcoming adversity, drugs and alcohol, anti-bullying, self-entitlement, and more. But this particular talk was on mental health. I shared my story of losing my brother to suicide and also my experience with depression, anxiety, and panic attacks. So it's a very dark topic, but as you can tell, I make it light. Because there's certainly dark parts of the story, but, you know, I'm self-deprecating, et cetera, as you well know. So, you know, the story goes up and down. It's great. I feel really, really good. But the start of the talk was not so successful. So I get up there, right? Because I'm about the, I didn't come at the very beginning because I had to come from afar. So I was probably about an hour and a half late, planned purposefully, not because I missed my talk. Like, I was late this morning. And thank you, New Jersey Transit, once again. Anyway, I digress. So I get there and I realize by the time I get up on stage, I'm introduced. These people, fine people in the audience, have been sitting for a good solid 2.5-3 hours. Now, we know, I don't care how comfortable the chair is, that's a long time to be sitting on your rump. So I said, hey, welcome. Thank you for having me here today. Guys, take 30 seconds, 60 seconds, stand up, stretch your legs. I have to get a few props ready here, and they welcome it. So they stand up, they're doing their thing, they're relaxed, you hear some chatter, they're very, very happy to be stretching their legs, etc. So that's going well. So I come back up, and I start off my talk with like a very declarative, bold, underscored, thematic, kind of dark tone. I'd say 10, 15 seconds into it, staying dead still, center stage, I get a tap on the shoulder. I turn around. It's the director of the event. He goes, Mark, do you think we could take a 5-10 minute break? So here I am. I gave him like a, you know, 60 second, 90 second break. And then you think it would have dawned on him to come back up to me at that point and said, hey, listen, you know, that's a great idea you had. Let's just, you know, let me just go up to the mic and just say, hey, listen, take a bathroom break. Let's take a 10, 15 minute break. But no. Maybe he was in the bathroom when I came up with this concept. So he came up on the stage, interrupted me, you know, and had everyone's full attention. And as a speaker, you know, as anyone, and this has happened to me actually another time, and I made a really big joke out of it. But this was not the setting because it was a very serious topic. I did make light of it a little bit, and they were thankful for the break. But it just goes to show you that anything can happen at any given time. When you're on a job, as a speaker, as a school teacher, as a semi-professional bike rider, as you're about to meet our two forthcoming guests, anything can happen, and you always have to be prepared. And you know what? You can't take yourself too seriously. But it was just funny, and those two particular incidents in 1 week, I thought were very, very funny. 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. So they are the 2016 National Bike Challenge champions. They cycled 23,000 miles, 783.1. Actually, I cut that short. So 23,783.1 miles. Not 0.2, not 0.5, 0.1 in just 153 days. That is amazing. Every day, rain, we won't say sleet, we'll say rain, sun, rain, clouds, you name it. So it's my pleasure to welcome Jack and Corrine. Team
Melody.
Yes. And you said it melodiously. That's excellent. Thank you guys so much for coming on the show.
It's great to be here, John.
Great to be here.
So I have to tell my listeners, PRN listeners, how I became acquainted with you guys, because it's a great story, because it's just a great example of the digital medium we live in. So we're on Facebook, and we got connected because someone sent me a lot of money to say, hey, just like them and follow them. I'm just kidding. So I said, yeah, these people are doing some great things. My God, I started seeing these cycling here, there, and everywhere. And I was just, I'm a cyclist, spin instructor, a triathlete, et cetera. And I just started taking notice of you, and what a great thing you were doing. So, Corrine, let's start with you. You have been in the exercise fitness world with your husband, Jack, for 23 years. But why an endeavor of this nature?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question.
that's my job.
Basically, we started off with last year with the National Bike Challenge. We got involved because we wanted to support Bike New York, which is something we volunteer with often. And
they've been on the show here before.
Yes,
Ken Podziva.
Yes, our
outstanding
friend.
Man. Great
yes,
organization.
And we wanted to support them in every way. We always like to support them in any way we can. So we decided to become part of the National Bike Challenge and be on their team. So, you know, not knowing, because we weren't, you know, endurance cyclists or anything at that point, we just thought we'll log miles and we'll have some fun and we'll get them some extra miles on, you know, with our pedals. And it was very odd because...
not on the same bike, may I? Yeah.
No. Not this year.
You're not
maybe
that strong.
Next year.
Maybe next year. You got the strength in you now.
Maybe, yeah.
Absolutely.
So we decided to, you know, as it progressed, we started seeing how we progressed, mm-hmm. and we really enjoyed pedal, you know, cycling, and we started seeing our numbers climb, and it really motivated us. So we really got excited, and Jack, you can add into this.
Yeah, what we wanted to do was actually challenge ourselves. That was the most important thing at first. And then we were representing Bike New York, so we wanted to do well for them. And then as time went along, I said, we can use this as a teaching tool and show people that it doesn't matter how old you are, mm-hmm. If you have a disability, if you have you're coming back from an illness or an injury, you can do anything you want. Just find your passion. And like you just said in the beginning, find your passion, have a goal, formulate a plan, and just pursue it relentlessly. And anything can be accomplished by that. Anything.
Well, as a transformation experts, both of you, and I guess also you're kind of civic-minded certainly as well, because we're going to get into more of the exercises that you did along the way besides just riding those mm-hmm. hundreds of thousands of miles. Well, I kind of embellished right there, didn't I? 23,000 miles is still a lot of miles, okay, no matter how you slice it. But the reality is you've been working with individuals for over two decades. And seeing the impact of what change can do, positively do for someone, whether it's overweight, a life challenge, a death in a family, or all these cumulatively.
Yeah, we've seen people through so many different things, and
it's such a passion of ours. We've worked with people that need to lose 150 pounds mm-hmm. Due to illness, just people that need to create a goal that didn't think they could do it on their own, so we would support that, and they would achieve those goals.
We've gotten people into the military,
yep.
Prepared for police tests, fire department tests. You know, whatever, it runs the gamut from whatever it is that they have to achieve in life, whether they wanted to or not. Sometimes it was something they had to do. We've seen them through, and it's been rewarding.
And I think one of our biggest achievements is actually training a blind person. Mm-hmm. He has a disability, he cannot see, and just navigating him. And the key to that is for him to have trust in us.
Sure.
The connection. And that's what's missing in a lot of people that train people. It's more about, you know, let me show you what I know in one day, you know. But to make that connection, to have that passion, to get to know their passions and their likes and dislikes and make that connection where they feel comfortable, and then navigate them through to each exercise.
Sure, and encouraged.
And yes, encouraged.
Exactly. So the individual who is blind, you're on a tandem bike, of course.
No, actually, he's not a cyclist.
No, he's not a cyclist.
Okay.
No,
right.
He's just somebody we've worked
and he actually
with.
Lost 100 pounds.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. So
fantastic.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
So now the National Bike Challenge, where you place first and second out of thousands of cyclists in New York State and eighth and 12th out of tens of thousands of riders nationally. Explain to me exactly the origins of National Bike Challenge and what it really represents.
The National Bike Challenge is an organization that was put together to encourage current cyclists, uniting them, and to encourage countless new cyclists, and it's basically just more of an extension of other advocacies, you know, for cycling. People are trying to, a lot of organizations are trying to make cycling, you know, more appealing to a lot of people, and that is, you know,
as a way of life,
as
even
a way
more
of
so
life,
nowadays
for
in 2016,
reason.
Sure.
Yes, whether it's recreationally, for exercise, for commuting, whatever it is.
Yeah. Look at New York City.
Yeah.
How bike-friendly it's become in the last 6 years.
Very much so, and that's what we decided to get involved with too, and we kind of as an extension have, you know, started branching out beyond that as well with more advocacy and taking care of bike paths and things like that. So we try to like really go all in with everything.
Now with the National Bike Challenge, you're in Howard Beach, a great part of New York State, New York overall. Was it something that you set out to do as in a local endeavor? Because that's what you do. You have the beauty of having so many different bike paths and I guess maybe 20, 30, 50-mile routes. I'm not sure what your routes were daily or if you changed things up, and we'll get to that. But would it ever or did it ever occur to you to say, wow, maybe, of course, this is in a perfect world, that I'd like to do my 23,000 miles going around the country?
We would love to have, but we also work.
And run a business.
A little thing called work. Because you still have to be a transformation expert.
Yes. That's right.
And you can't do it on a bicycle. Well, maybe you can. I mean, you know, hey, what better power than to, you know, inspire people than you're on a bike and climbing up a hill in Montana.
Right.
A mountain, right? Hey, yeah. You can do it. Hey, Peloton, right. The company Peloton's taking the internet by storm.
That's right.
Jack and Corinne can do it.
Next year.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
There we go. Anyway, yeah. So obviously, in a perfect world, that would have been something you would have cared
to
have done.
We would love to have done that.
Sure.
Absolutely. Definitely. It's actually a lot more tedious to try to, you know, do this
cramming
kind
in
of
your
mileage.
Normal
yeah,
day.
And we have to get the most miles in the least amount of time.
Ah.
So it creates, you know, a little bit of a struggle.
All right. Up to this decision, what kind of cyclist were you?
Recreational.
At best?
Yeah,
yep.
Yeah.
So you had to up the bike or you kept your recreational bikes?
We actually bought hybrid bikes, but they're more geared to performance. Mm-hmm. But we want to show that we can do it on any bike,
okay,
pretty much. So that was a challenge to add that in.
Yeah.
So you had the stamina. You had certainly the threshold of being well-conditioned
right.
Because, I mean, I can look at you and obviously knowing your business, you're well-fit and healthy.
Thank you.
Very handsome bunch, man. Beautiful bunch here. Look at you guys. Happy married couple, fit. Look at you guys. Try to keep your hands off each other. Come on, just a few more minutes.
Blushing.
Bear with me. So at that point, you realize, okay, this is something, a feat we can do. Number one, it's just a great message to send out there.
Yep.
Because, again, you are very community-based and minded. A great message digitally, so the world to see.
Right.
And also for Howard Beach. Howard Beach, historically, has had some, you know, not so many positive things happen. Of course, you know, the positive things don't make the news like the negative things happen. And most recently, the murder. So it was a great time as
right.
well to throw some positive energy out there on a daily basis, no less.
actually, that was a big motivation for us.
That also motivated us.
Yeah, because, we had that happen, and we ride past that spot every day, and
wow.
It was, and you could feel it was palpable in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
That's affected us tremendously. It's a small community. It's a small town, and it really has affected people. And you just feel the dankness of the. It just was really amazing.
It's palpable, sure.
So we knew we were really headed in a great direction. So we really that was just something that made us want to do even more and do this for the community.
Right. That was however we could uplift the neighborhood, that's what was part of our purpose too.
Shine some good light.
Yeah. So that's actually kind of just an added component that actually kind of worked out in the timing.
It did.
Which is great.
Exactly.
So now everyone's busy in life. You have a child who's kind of grown, certainly a young man who's out of the house, but you have a business. So to cram in 80 miles, obviously you sat down, you did the math. Did you kind of know that you kind of have to do that mileage to be in the running?
Absolutely.
And more importantly, let me interrupt you 1 second, Jack. How important was it for you to not only finish, but to finish on top?
It became very important. It did. I said
competition's
we...
Competition's in your blood.
Yes. I said we went this far, we have to reach the top. I mean, we put a lot of time and effort into it. And changing our whole day, getting up sometimes 3:30 in the morning.
Wow.
It was quite a challenge. And if we were a little bit late or for
sure,
whatever reason,
weather.
Then it would be a problem that we would have to try to make up these miles at night. And we had a goal to at least get in 80 miles a day to get those 100 points in. So it became a challenge every day. And the two biggest things I found to be challenging was, and I guess my wife will answer that too, was the mental aspect and the recovery aspect.
Mm, sure.
Now, we didn't get... We had the least amount of required sleep that you should get, which we got about 6 hours, sometimes even a little less. So power naps would help us out. But to me, if I'm going to generalize this, the most important thing was the nutrition aspect of it.
Oh, absolutely.
So what we tried to do was stay away from anything that comes in a box, can, or jar, any kind of processed food, which is loaded with sugar, especially high fructose corn syrup, which is a poison to the body, which is inflammatory on the body and suppresses the immune system. So I want to keep away from that so we wouldn't break down at any time. And that's what we did. And
Except for flats.
Those, yeah,
unavoidable,
outside
right?
Outside forces.
Yeah, you got that right.
Yeah, we had plenty of flats, but we were able to fix them pretty quickly.
Yeah, we got pretty good at that, actually.
Yeah.
And also the mental aspect of that, which you were talking about, is just knowing every single day you get through the day, and then you say, oh, I have to do this again tomorrow.
Yeah,
and,
you're in the shower, you feel good, and you're like, oh, I did it. Oh, man, yes. It's 10 o'clock at night.
Yeah, by the end of the day, it was great to be off the saddle.
Yes.
It was like, I couldn't wait to get off the saddle the last like hour or so. But then the funny thing was I actually looked forward to being on it again the next day. It was a very odd situation.
Well, it's obviously I'm preaching to the choir here, but for anyone who doesn't work out on a semi-regular basis, for number one, the excuse that you don't have time, it's because, yes, everyone's tight on time, but if you make the time, you realize how much more energy you have. And you guys know.
Absolutely.
Certainly, in riding so many days consecutively, your body can only take so much. And no matter how much conditioning you're in physically and mentally, you just need downtime.
Yeah.
Right.
Body needs time to recuperate. But the reality is that you're mentally, you're just so stoked and so powered. The endorphins are just going, nonstop, and you're properly nutritioned and you're getting the sleep. And obviously, the diet is so important. I know you didn't have any food trucks trailing you,
No.
Saying, hey, we're over here.
Maybe next year.
What are they
year.
Called? Roach coaches?
Roach coaches.
Those are the old days, right?
Yes.
They got some really good restaurants on wheels, man. No kidding.
That's true.
I guess that's one of the reasons why you have a forthcoming children's book coming out.
Yes.
And a portion of that, I imagine a good thrust of that, is about role models for children.
Yes.
And one of the components is proper nutrition. It's vital to start at such a young age.
Yes. Actually, that came organically through our work with our clients. Many would ask us questions about their kids and how to introduce good habits to their children. And our premise behind everything we do is one great habit. You start with one great habit and you build on that. And the book just started happening because Jack got inspired by a drawing that I did. And he said, we're going to write a children's book. And then we just we came up with our story, and he fed me so much good stuff. And then I went and I penned it. And it's sort of.
So you're a pencil artist as well, correct?
Yes, I am. And
quite a gifted one.
Thank you.
Is that why you're sketching your husband during the middle of this interview?
So I never stop. And you too, Mark. You're very handsome. So.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Checks it out.
But, you know, it's it was a passion. And in a way, we kind of looked at it as a like a sideways into informing a family in a positive, happy, entertaining way with a character and a fun story, some really good things that they can incorporate into their lives without making them feel guilty about the way they're living now. Because everyone, you know, with all the information we have, people just don't understand the kind of choices you have to make. They still make the not so great choices. And our thing is to try to give them the ability and the desire and the motivation to want to make those choices, because there's a reason to make them, being that you feel great, and that's a good thing. And so we kind of show that in the story through the friends of the characters, and the town has some issues because there's a processed food factory involved, and and then there's redemption, because there's some greed, and then there's some really good stuff that happens out of the kindness of people's hearts. So it's environmental. It's got some
good moral lessons.
And of
ethical
course, nutrition.
Yes. Yes,
and
everything.
Good parenting book overall.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Wow, you guys are on a roll.
Yeah,
2016's your year.
Yes.
So when can people see this on the shelves?
Actually, well, we're just about wrapping it up, and who's putting it? You know, the man who's putting it together for us needs a few weeks, and we're hoping to get it on the shelves. I'm hoping by like maybe the end of November.
Yes,
great.
That's what we're
just in time for Christmas.
Yeah,
and people will be able to find this where?
Well, hopefully Amazon and quite a few other places. We'll see what happens. And what's very important to us is not only will it help the people who read the book, but it also half the proceeds will be donated to Bike New York.
That name just keeps coming up. We can't avoid it, right?
Love that organization.
It's awesome.
Well, there's a great quote by Ken, because besides you talking like you're feeling like an Olympian, certainly for the both of you, and the moment that you certainly experience it. But Jack and Corrine, this is also a quote from, actually, I can't find the quote. The quote was, where am I? I don't know where it is. But he said some really great stuff about you.
Yeah,
I don't want to, you know, surmise what he said. But Ken Podziva, president and CEO of Bike New York, the TD Bank tour here in New York City. It's great. And also, I didn't realize that you guys were in New Jersey a couple weeks ago. The
All
Twin
over.
Lights tour.
Yes,
and I think you rode right by my house.
Really?
Literally.
Oh,
wow. I had no knowledge of it.
That's so amazing.
And I got chastised by Ken. So, Ken, I apologize to you on a public medium. Again, I will never, ever miss the Twin Lights tour.
And we were marshals. You should have sent us to
That's
your
right.
house and had
Yeah,
us
you can marshal
say,
me
on,
right now.
That's
martial
right.
law, baby.
That's right.
Jack and Corrine. So it's great that, you know, obviously you're doing this on many and multiple levels.
Yes.
The book is, I guess, a byproduct of this.
Yes.
And
yes.
Is there any parts of the book that are really reflective of, obviously, I don't think there's a factory in your town making bad nutrients for kids. That's actually an oxymoron, right? Bad and nutrient?
Yeah, a little bit.
Well, you get the gist.
Yes.
But I imagine that there's some parallel.
Well, you know, based on the fact that it's just a norm, basically, that, you know, you go to the store, look at all the stuff that's out there that's ready for people to buy. And you go shopping and you see everybody putting all the boxes of colorful stuff in their carts. And the children are very excited to get them. And, you know, yesterday I saw a child with a blue mouth, who was obviously just enjoyed some kind of sugary treat, and he was jumping up and down trying to get a lollipop.
Of course he's jumping up and down.
I'm like, this is exactly what I'm talking about. Sugar is very addictive, and we want to make people aware of that and to give them, like I said, the tools to understand what it is that they need to avoid, and for the most part, and just to make the right choices, the good choices, most of the time.
And of course, you know, adversity affects everybody in multiple different ways. And one of the ways that you grieved was on the bicycle after your mom died and passed.
Yeah.
So it's a great way to get fit, stay sane, you know, get rid of the day's stress or prepare for the next day. And of course, I never even thought about this, but, you know, it's good to grieve.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
As you found out. Is there any grieving message in the book? I know it's a child's book, but in terms of, like, loss in life.
Not in this book, really, so much.
That's just, good, because that was a bad idea I just mentioned.
Yes,
maybe the next book.
Keep it light, Mark. Come on.
Let's go with maybe the next book.
Yeah, let's go with the next book.
But it was, I thought of this, and Jack and I were very, you know, we were touched very, very profoundly by that sudden loss. And, you know, it was, I just realized on the bike how just completely zen it was for me. And it forces you to be in the moment, and you just sort of like, you know, exercise your soul. You really
and we
do.
Talk about positive perspective. Mm-hmm. You know, even when we're riding and you get that dark time where you're just like, why am I doing this after hours of riding? I could be doing something else. And then I always think of someone else that has issues, bigger issues that they can't help or they can't change. And I said, why am I complaining? We have a very good friend that we met through Facebook, that his name is Michael Goldberg. And he has mitochondrial disease. He just got it a couple of years ago. He just got his black belt in Krav Maga a couple of years ago. So he was very healthy.
I got one of those too, Jack.
There you go. I know you do.
Awesome.
And, you know, the mitochondria is the power plant mm-hmm. of the cell. And it affects all the cells except the red blood cells. And when those cells break down, systems break down. Here's a gentleman that's in pain all the time. And he's someone that inspires me because he's able to do and push every day to his fullest, whatever he can get. So that is an inspiration, and that what motivates me. And I say, why am I complaining?
Right.
Why?
Oh, and inspired you also to do a fundraiser for him.
Yes, absolutely.
Right. Yeah, we try to do things based on the fact that, you know, he's such an advocate. Mm. You know, we wanted him to know that there are people who really, really care. And we want to show love by gathering some friends, get a nice donation for him and give that to him personally so that he can either use it for his foundation or whatever he needs, because, you know, insurance doesn't cover everything.
Absolutely,
so.
Sure. You know, at this point, I can't help but give a nod to social mediums and social platforms like Facebook. I mean, it's brought the two of you guys together.
Right.
I mean,
yes.
You and, I'm sorry, what's his name?
Michael
Jack?
Goldberg.
Yeah. Michael Goldberg.
Michael Goldberg.
You know, and you guys raised critical funds for him. You met Ken Podziba from
right.
Bike New York. We met. Oh, my
That's
God.
Right.
This is just
it's
like
cool.
a Facebook family.
I love Facebook
it's pretty
now.
Wild. You know, I mean, obviously it serves multiple purposes, but
yes.
it's great when things like this really kind of work out. And also another prong to multiple prongs for your ride to become national bike champions in the state of New York, a part of the National Bike Challenge, I should say, is that you also did volunteering along the way.
Yes.
You cleaned up bike paths that were owned by, I guess, the city and state of New
yes.
York City.
Yes.
But
yeah.
you took it on your own volition,
mm-hmm.
your own time, and money out of your own pocket.
Yes.
Tell
well,
us about that, please.
Well, we have a motto. If you want things to change and improve, you got to be the solution.
You do houses as well?
We do anything.
Okay, maybe.
Good. I'll put a bike path right through my house.
There we go.
So we figured we'll take it upon ourselves because it's not getting done, and I'm constantly getting flats and other people complaining. So I said, you know what? Let's get together. Let's formulate a plan and get a group together. And, of course, Ken is unbelievable because he's at all our events.
Mm-hmm.
He's a staunch
supporter.
He's
awesome.
He's unbelievable. He comes from Connecticut. He takes time out.
Because he's got a lot of free time on his hands.
Yes,
yeah.
I'm sure he does.
He certainly does. And I got a bunch of other friends, family members, and clients. And we cleaned up quite a few paths.
Yeah, it was pretty fun. And it was. And what was really exciting, Mark, was when cyclists would be riding by and they're like, thank you. You know, that was like, it just made my day. I was
yeah.
like, this is so cool. You know, it's such a nice thing to hands-on transform
thank you.
Something.
But get off your bike
yeah,
and help!
But move.
Yeah, yeah
also,
please,
thank
get out
you,
of my
move
way.
Move away, please, because I'm trying to cycle through. But basically, it was really nice to be part of something that
sure.
gave some immediate
gratification
good stuff,
and
yeah.
safety as well.
Absolutely,
yes.
definitely.
Now, and we mentioned that cycling helped you grieve mm-hmm. while on your bicycle, yes. and you're also a 2-time breast cancer survivor.
Yes, I am.
So you're pretty indomitable, my girl.
Thank you.
You know that, Jack.
She's very tough. She inspires me all the time.
I mean, you thought she's tough because she's Teflon because she can stay married to you.
That's right.
But now it's on multiple different levels. And she's an artist, and she's an acclaimed cyclist, and a soon-to-be-acclaimed author.
Yes.
Yeah.
An illustrationist. Illustrator. Thank you.
Illustrator. Something like
thank
that.
Thank you. Time for breakfast at 11:48 in the morning in New York City time. By the way, the show is Insight. My name is Mark Fowler. It's the Progressive Radio Network. My guests are today Jack and Corrine Willody.
Yes.
They have done an incredible job. They actually spent 5 months on a bicycle. That's right. I think they were actually born on a bicycle. By the way, their motto, you can achieve anything at any age and under any circumstance. As you guys all know this in life, you only need to find your passion, set a goal, formulate a plan, and pursue it relentlessly. They're from Howard Beach, and they are a fitness couple. and transformation experts, certainly civic-minded, and have won the certainly part of the National Bike Challenge and placed 8th and 12th out of the National Bike Challenge, but 1st and 2nd place out of thousands of cyclists here in New York State. And that alone should have given you great pride because, again, there's thousands of cyclists. And, you know, New York State is a heavy-duty cycling state.
Big time.
People don't realize this. Oh, those bike messengers. No, no, no. There are some serious, serious riders. A lot of former Olympians hailed right from this state as well.
Right. Well, actually, we passed a lot of them as we were riding. And what we've come to find out is a lot of them were seeing us because they've actually come what's the word I'm trying to use?
Full circle.
They have actually approached us on Facebook and congratulate us.
Fantastic.
And actually in the National Bike Challenge Forum as well. And that sportsmanship is really very touching.
Yes.
But and the fact that we are not in our 20s, 30s, or even 40s, it was very exciting that we could do such great
liars.
Things.
Bunch of liars.
Being the ages we are, that's why we say at any age, because actually we're getting up there.
And so. We love to lead by example.
It sounds like you have. And speaking of leading by example, you have a son who's in his 20s?
33.
Oh, sorry, 33. Yeah. Oh, so maybe you are in your 40s.
I'm a little up there.
So you're in your 40s. Okay, we got that clear. Very, very important issue here. Who has a disability.
Yes.
Who must be just really floored and empowered by both of you on multiple levels.
He is. He's very supportive. He's very proud of both of us and tells us all the time. And I think we serve as great inspiration for him to get through what he has to get through. And he's pretty aware of his own limitations and issues. And I've taught him to not be held back by them, not to be defined by anybody's label.
Right.
And also
absolutely. My difference makes me stronger. That's my motto.
I love that.
Perfect.
And also, and he's going to be very inspired by you.
oh, my God.
and also to never wait for people. You have to do it yourself. You have to get out there and go and do. And, you know, don't sit back and wait for other people to do
never
it for
wait.
You. The world is not kind. You must do it for yourself. And that's
you got to make things happen.
Yeah.
You really do. And it's unfortunate that a lot of times we expect things to happen to us because we're entitled to some degree. And I understand why people can feel that way. A lot of times people with disabilities feel that way. Right. But it doesn't stop there. And that's a whole nother topic as well. But I just want to refer to a very interesting article I read yesterday. And I forget the name of the and I'll put it on my PRN page under Insight. But it was about being disabled. And the author himself is very, very successful writer. And the condition is, it's a very rare condition where basically he doesn't have, it's almost like ALS, but he doesn't have control of his body.
Mm-hmm.
And it started out by saying he was very, very saddened because a very powerful woman in the disability advocacy community, actually, tragic story, I don't want to belabor the point, but basically she was getting off a plane, deboarding a plane off a ramp on the dock. And her chair went into the water and she strapped and perished instantly.
Oh my goodness.
So really, really sad. So it tells, and there's a reason why I tell the story, because it basically goes to the gamut where there's a 14-year-old who has a very similar condition and didn't go into great detail, but in a state where suicide is legal, assisted suicide, took his life at 14 years of age. And basically meaning the thrust of the article, the takeaway is disability does not mean death. And, of course, we're talking about extreme cases of disability.
Right.
But cognitively, all the three people we were talking about, two people I was discussing, were all very, very present.
Right.
Obviously, physically, it's a different challenge. But it's just very sad. And we can't speak, I can't speak for those individuals. But I just want to communicate the words from this author. And the is basically New York Times yesterday. So that would be the 6th. Yesterday's the 6th, correct?
I think today's the 6th.
Or the 5th, Wednesday.
Yeah.
Google disability, and I forget the name of the author, but again, I can post it on the Insight page on the PRN.FM website. But very, very fascinating, because regardless of a disability, I say to people, we all have a disability. How obvious or not, you know, it runs the gamut. But what you do with your life and disability, that defines you.
Right.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
So do you feel defined after 23,000 miles?
Well, partially.
Yeah.
I feel, well, you know what, defined in the fact that I know that we can do what we set out to do.
Right.
Well, you knew that beforehand.
Yeah. But
still,
I mean, it confirms
it's always
it.
A little daunting when you, when you have a task of this gargantuan caliber.
Yes.
I mean, it really is a Herculean effort to do something of this nature.
Well,
yeah, that organically grew as time went on.
Yeah. And, well, all right, let's stop being, put the niceties away. Did you ever drive each other crazy? Did you ever have to ride apart?
Just because
you needed space.
We did once in a while.
Okay, good.
Yeah. Scheduling.
Space is good.
Yeah. Sometimes she had to do some illustrations, and I would get up early in the morning and do my writing, come back, and then we would meet.
And call home, or just say, hey, my models are done. What are you doing, lazy pants?
And now you get to go out. But yeah, it was, listen, it's a big, huge undertaking. But the advantage we have is that we're together 24/7. That's why they call us Team Willody, because we really pretty much do everything together. So it kind of, we're accustomed to that togetherness already.
Oh, marriage is a team, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. In more ways than one, on two wheels or four wheels or you name it.
Yes, definitely.
And so on the in and out of the gym. Mm-hmm. So this must be great to incentivize your customers.
Oh, yes.
As a transformation expert / personal trainer. Mm-hmm. You've brought me some great pictures in, and maybe we can put those on the website as well. But we're running out of time in terms of examples. But you've kind of illustrated how many and how to what degree you've helped people. And when you help somebody physically, you help them mentally in all capacities and facets of life. And there's no better feeling in the world. And I know Donald Trump has a lot of money and other people have a lot of things. But when you even hear of Bruce Springsteen, mm-hmm. A worldwide international icon mm-hmm. who suffers from debilitating depression, where he couldn't put his foot on the ground at a bed in the morning. It doesn't matter how much fame or fortune, because it's really irrelevant. It's how you feel and what you can do with your life.
It's the truth.
And the support around you.
And any given moment.
It's a passion. It's a love. It's in our DNA to help, support.
Speaking of DNA, you need to take a drug sample here. Drug test.
Pleasure.
Yes.
Because we need to have, all the tours, tennis circuits, NFL players, everything. Team Willody, that is consists of Jack and Corinne Willody, in their 40s. I definitely think they are, because they're phenomenal. You guys, your energy is palpable. It's contagious. And we love you.
Thank you so much, Mark. We appreciate it.
Congratulations on many levels, and certainly for donating the proceeds, half the proceeds of your book, your forthcoming book. Stay tuned. Do you have a title for that book?
Yes, it's The Dog Who Saved Pleasantville, A Tale of Lifestyle Choices for Kids and Their Parents.
Oh, I love it. The Dog Who Saved Pleasantville. That sounds like an all-American book.
Yes,
my name is Mark Farrell. This has been the Progressive Radio Network's Insight. Check me out on PRN.FM. And if you want me to talk about your school, college, or organization, check me out at MarkFarrellMotivation.com. MarkFarrellMotivation.com. Gary Knowles next.